Support for TPR Podcast comes from Port of Entry, a podcast filled with cross-border stories from cross-border people like you. Port of Entry zooms in on some of the interesting and unexpected ways the U.S. and Mexico are inextricably linked, despite the wall running between us. From KPBS and PRX, Port of Entry is available now on Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen. Get details at portofentrypod.org.
Welcome to Fronteras, a program about issues along the U.S.-Mexico border and changing demographics in the Southwest. I'm Norma Martinez with Texas Public Radio in San Antonio. Latinos are central to the upcoming election. Are they a sleeping giant that could decide a critical race? What drives them to the polls? Healthcare, faith, abortion, jobs? Are they all Democrats? Are they Republican? Campaigns are targeting this population with Spanish language attack ads on their opponents in order to sway the Latino vote.
Joe Biden está deteriorado.
Rapidly rising
Trump ignoró a los expertos y no pudo contener el virus. Ahora los trabajos desaparecieron y Trump todavía sin un plan.
The Latino electorate is more complex and diverse than politicians might think. Just because an ad is in Spanish isn't going to guarantee a vote. The Texas Organizing Project Education Fund commissioned a study to examine Latino voting attitudes. They partnered with the strategic and creative consultancy firm Culture Concepts and produced the study Real Talk, Understanding Texas Latino Voters Through Meaningful Conversation. We're joined today by Michelle Tremillo, Executive Director of the Top Education Fund, and cultural anthropologist Cecilia Bailly, founder and principal of Culture Concepts and co-author of the study. Bailly says the report ultimately finds there really is no definitive Latino vote.
I think the efforts to define a Latino vote have been focused on mobilizing a certain segment of the Latino electorate that can have quite a big influence on election outcomes if they vote similarly. And so I don't want to discount that the Latino vote is a real thing as far as a strategic move to influence electoral outcomes. Now, the question of whether all or most Latinos think about politics in the same way, that's what this study was exploring, and we're not the first ones to say that Latinos are not a monolith, that in fact they view politics through very diverse perspectives, and not just left and right, Republican and Democrat, but we found that people have a mix of views sort of throughout the ideological spectrum, and that more than other ethnic groups perhaps, you know, they're thinking very independently. They haven't been engaged very deeply by the parties. And so Latinos are not speaking in highly ideological ways, is what we found. So they're instead, you know, putting together their own views on different issues and sort of carving out their own positions. That doesn't mean that they don't vote more overwhelmingly for the Democratic Party. We know that they do. But this study really explores the diversity of opinions and where that comes from.
Well, before we get into the study, Michelle, something that Cecilia was saying, that Latinos are not a monolithic voting bloc. It kind of almost seems to fall under the same sort of myth that all Latinos are the same. Latinos are a very diverse group: Mexican American, South American, Central Americans, Puerto Rican, you know, Dominican Republic. There's a very broad swath of who can be described as Latinos. Not all Latinos are Democrats. We're not all Catholic. We're not all about immigration. It's just such a very broad spectrum that we seem to have been lumped into this single identity that politicians and demographers seem to jump on.
Yes, that is true. You know, and I'll just say, I mean, at TOP, you know, we work year round in low to moderate income neighborhoods in Black and Latino communities across Texas. And, you know, what I find every day in our work is that Latinos care about the same issues that Black voters care about. that white voters care about, Asian voters, right? Like, I think that there are fundamental issues that we all care about. And, you know, at our organization, every day of the year before COVID, we were out knocking on doors, sitting on couches. And the first question that we ask people is, what worries you? What issues are you concerned about? And some of those issues are pretty universal, Latino, Black, White, like I said, and they are access to health care. They are living wage jobs. It is a good education for their children.
Cecilia, this study wasn't just based on you calling up a Latino registered voter or a potential voter and asking them a question, and then you click off a box. You actually interacted with over 100 people across a broad swath of Texas, and you had in-depth conversations with them as well. Can you talk to me a little bit about that process?
Sure. The study was purely qualitative. It was all one-on-one interactions, and we didn't even do focus groups because we wanted to be able to ask a lot of follow-up questions with an individual and try to get at the deeper reasons or factors that drive their political positions and why they vote and don't vote. And so these were all one-on-one. That's the most labor-intensive kind of research that you can do because of the amount of time it takes. But that's really what allowed us to get into the complexity of the issues. So, for instance, someone who doesn't vote can't necessarily tell you offhand why they don't vote. They'll give you some more surface reason. And then as you explore other experiences that they've had in their life and their views of government, you start to piece it together. You know, that was our method as social scientists, as ethnographers. That's what we do, is we have deep one-on-one conversations. But what we discovered in the process of doing that is that that's precisely what Latinos need in order to be more engaged around politics and to be motivated to think themselves about what they want and why they engage the way they do. We had a number of people who told us this year that our conversations had left them thinking about voting, and that some of them went on to vote for the first time in their lives in the primaries this year. So I think that listening was the methodology, but it was also the conclusion of the study, is that more people need to listen to Latinos and engage them. And that dovetails beautifully with the approach that Texas Organizing Project has been taking in the past years that has to do with one-on-one engagement and careful listening.
Well, Michelle, I know that this study, I believe, if I'm not mistaken, was conducted while the pandemic was occurring. And I'm curious as to whether some of the respondents may have a little bit more impetus to want to vote now because of the pandemic, that maybe circumstances now, low employment, losing jobs, perhaps even losing family members to the disease or having to pay for hospitalization bills because of COVID-19. Did you find that that may have impacted how a voter would answer the questions that you were asking them this year compared to maybe how they would have answered in maybe 2018 or 2016?
Well, first of all, the study actually was conducted before COVID-19, and we were scheduled to release it earlier in the year, and with the pandemic, didn't feel like that was possible, and decided to go back and ask of the non-voters or sporadic voters if they felt any differently, having now experienced COVID-19. And I can leave it to Cecilia to share a bit more about what changed for people in those conversations.
Sure. The main interviews happened between July and October of last year. And then we went back to a subset of 20 people out of those 104 in May. And there was a marked difference in the way they were speaking. And specifically, we found that with people who don't vote or people who vote rarely, a lot of them have a hard time connecting government action directly to their lives. And so they're very informed. They follow political news. But when you ask them, can government make your life better? They struggle a little more to answer that question than people who vote regularly. And that had changed in May when we talked to them. Now they were following the almost daily decisions that local, county, state, federal government were making. And these decisions were constantly changing. So there was a lot of stress among our interviewees about knowing what was the right thing to do. And suddenly they could connect government action very directly to their lives, and they felt that a lot was at stake. And they were speaking much more urgently about needing to vote and wanting to have a say during the election. So I think COVID-19 provided the civics lesson that is hard to get any other way. One thing is the motivation and conviction to vote. And then the other thing is whether you have the habit of voting and you feel comfortable enough and you feel like you belong at the polls. And that's the last piece that really needs to click for somebody to show up and vote.
Cecilia Bailly is the founder and principal of Culture Concepts. She's the co-author of the report Real Talk, Understanding Texas Latino Voters Through Meaningful Conversation. It was commissioned by the Texas Organizing Project Education Fund. We're also talking to Michelle Tremillo, executive director and co-founder of TOP. When we come back, what actions should be taken to get Latinos to the polls?
If we can create this positive cycle of participation, right? If I vote, things change. If things change, I vote. We're going to need to do more to create that cycle in the Latino community.
Our conversation continues next on Fronteras.
Support for TPR Podcast comes from Port of Entry, a podcast filled with cross-border stories from cross-border people like you. Port of Entry zooms in on some of the interesting and unexpected ways the U.S. and Mexico are inextricably linked, despite the wall running between us. From KPBS and PRX, Port of Entry is available now on Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen. Get details at portofentrypod.org.
Welcome back to Fronteras. I'm Norma Martinez with Texas Public Radio in San Antonio. Candidates for president are after the Latino vote.
But Joe Biden has spent 47 years selling out to the, different interests in Washington. It's really sad. He sold out the Hispanic American community, sending you jobs to China, making your communities less safe.
Donald Trump has failed the Hispanic community time and time again, and that's not a secret. Whether it's in his heinous act of separating children from their families at our border, or his repeated attacks on Dreamers.
A nonpartisan study of Latino voters across Texas shows that many don't feel like they're heard by the people in power. Many doubt that their vote matters and that politicians don't really care about them. Only 40% of eligible Texas Latinos voted in 2016. That compares to 55% of all eligible Texans. How can candidates reach these voters and urge them to get to the polls to ensure Latinos that their voices matter? A study commissioned by the Texas Organizing Project Education Fund explores what forces drive Latinos to vote. We're talking today with co-author of the study, Cecilia Bailly, and Michelle Tremillo, executive director and co-author of TOP. Tremillo says it starts with creating a voting community in your household and among your friends.
You know, I really appreciate this question. And in part, the answer to it is part of the inspiration behind the study in the first place. You know, I'm fourth generation Tejana. And I will tell you, before I had a high school and college classmate that was running for political office, I had no idea if my mother voted in anything except the presidential election between the first Bush and Michael Dukakis. It was the only time I can recall seeing my mother be civically engaged. She was watching the poll returns the night of the election. Prior to that, and even post that, we did not have conversations about voting. So I can't tell you if she was a regular voter or not. I was inspired in college, right? When we talk about people belonging to voting communities, I think first and foremost, we think family. But, you know, a voting community can be created in a family, in a college campus, in a community, in a neighborhood, in a PTA. You know, one of the things that we noticed is that in our work, right, in the Latino community and trying to form a relationship with unlikely Latino voters, that they were less likely to live with a frequent voter than the list of potential Black voters that we were targeting. You know, in our organization, we have this working theory that if we talk to people, if we ask them what is important to them, if we engage in those conversations, if we not just show up at election time, but also hold elected officials accountable, if we can create this positive cycle of participation, right? If I vote, things change. If things change, I vote. We're going to need to do more to create that cycle in the Latino community.
You know, Latinos are newer voters overall, right? They don't come from families that have been voting for a long time. But there's a misconception that Latinos don't vote in higher numbers because they're immigrants. The studies show quantitatively, and TOP has observed anecdotally, that it actually feels a bit easier to turn a naturalized citizen into a voter than a second, third, fourth generation Mexican-American, for example, into a voter. And so what we found, or what we observed, is that with those first generation Latinos, there's an openness to a new way of doing things. And they're open to the argument that voting is important, even if their parents didn't do it. What happens is if you have a family for generations living a similar experience of not voting and also of experiencing other forms of disempowerment, social, economic disempowerment, that habit of not voting becomes more entrenched. And so it can be tougher to convince a third or fourth generation Latino who has never seen their family members vote and has not experienced a lot of economic mobility in their family, for instance. It can be harder to convince them that their vote can lead to some sort of difference. And that's where I say that non-voting is an American problem. It's not an immigrant problem.
So it would be interesting to see how this study may be updated with a view towards the current social justice protests, because ever since the killing of George Floyd, it really has spurred so many people, Black, brown, white, of all ethnicities, to come together. So I'm curious, Michelle, if through TOP, if you've noticed sort of a surge in interest in wanting to become involved.
We definitely have, you know, and I will say, you know, we talk often inside our organization about the twin impacts of COVID and the uprisings. You know, part of what was important in this study for us is that it's a tool to help accelerate the growth of Latino civic participation. Latino voting has been steadily increasing, at least since 2008. We can see a real pattern. You know, much like we talk about in the study, that we should stop thinking of the Latino electorate as this sleeping giant that will wake up one day and show up in its numbers. I think what's really critical for us with this study is that it demonstrates that Latinos, like all voters, want a reciprocal engagement. And I think elected officials and government officials do choose to engage with certain constituencies year-round. What we find in our work year-round and what we find in this study is that the majority of Latinos are ignored, right? Those interests, those priorities, that reciprocal engagement, right? We often find when we knock on someone's door, again, we're targeting people who are not currently engaged. We find that we're the first people to knock on the door and ask someone to participate. And when we can make that connection, more often than not, people do choose to participate, right? They choose to become part of an organization like TOP and become part of a voting community. We are able to create that sense of belonging. We are able to create that sense of agency and create that feeling of being invested in the political system. Those of us who believe in democracy have a responsibility to do everything that we can to ensure that Latinos feel welcome to participate.
Well, and Cecilia, I think that Michelle brought up a great point. Sometimes people don't participate because they're not asked. It's as simple as that. Just reaching out to somebody and asking them, or just talking to them and explaining to them why it's important to them, reaching out to them individually, not just as a group. Because when you're talking to somebody one-on-one, that's going to make it more personal. That's going to make somebody feel like they really can make a difference.
This question of whether your voice matters, we don't just naturally have a sense that our voice does matter. You know, we need to hear that. We need to see that. And Latinos have not received that message enough in the political sphere. We had a really interesting interview with a non-voter in San Antonio. Well into the interview, he ended up saying that he had actually pulled into the parking lot of a polling place a few times and then hadn't gotten off. And he had a hard time articulating why he didn't. But we realized that he didn't have the conviction or the sense that that was for him or that he belonged there. And so you're absolutely right. I think that spreading this message and this welcome and this conviction that your voice matters in this space, in the political space, it is as important as every other voter's. And even if you haven't seen your family doing it, you can become part of this voting tradition, and you should teach your children to become part of it. I think that's the project that lies ahead of us with Latinos.
Cecilia Bailly is a cultural anthropologist and is founder and principal of Culture Concepts. She's the co-author of the report, Real Talk, Understanding Texas Latino Voters Through Meaningful Conversation. We also spoke with Michelle Tremillo, executive director and founder of the Texas Organizing Project Education Fund, which commissioned the report. Find a copy of the study at tpr.org. Thanks for joining us this week on Fronteras. You can find the show online at tpr.org and wherever you get your podcasts. Fronteras is produced by Norma Martinez and Lauren Terrazas. Our executive producer is Dan Katz. Our digital content producer is Bree Kirkham. Our editor is Fernando Ortiz Jr. Charanga Cakewalk composed our theme music. I'm Norma Martinez with Texas Public Radio in San Antonio.